coming at ya. This is Mike.
And Dan.
This is Comparing Apples to Oranges. We're at the Rhino Studios. That's what I called your house. The Rhino Studios.
I call it the Palatial Rhino Estates, but whatever.
Yeah, we're in the studio of the estates.
Yeah, we have to make it sound a little bigger than what it really is. We're just sitting in my living room.
Aluminum foil up on the walls, though. Sound baffling? Aluminum
foil. Egg cartons covering all the walls.
Yeah, but you have the egg still in them. Smells pretty ripe in here.
Uh-huh. And we got dogs heavy breathing right next to us. So
I want to bring that up.
Hopefully the mics won't pick that up.
It's not me or Dan, unless, you know, you're into that thing, and you guys can call in half an hour.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of fetishes out there, so you never know. Maybe we can kind of get a new niche audience and go from, like, 4 subscribers to 6.
No, I mean, like, that's just ASMR. It's like heavy breathing.
I don't know what that means.
Really? I got a couple things I'll send you in the YouTube. You'll either be super enthusiastic about it, or you'll be...
Should I not open it on my work computer?
It kind of depends on your reaction to it, apparently. There's like a percentage of the population that get really jazzed up. All of the people who get jazzed up about it swear that it's not sexual. Which, I mean, why would you swear that unless it were true?
Can we have an intern look that up for me and bring me something here in a second?
Clickety clack clack, clickety clack clack. That's them on
the
keyboard.
We got them just running around here.
Today, on Comparing Apples to Oranges, we are going to take two things that belong in the same category that are not part of the same genre, and we're going to compare them. We have chosen what we're going to call lesser known greatest hit albums. Dan, can you tell us why we chose this?
So it was kind of interesting. I came across this article online from the great, well-respected publication Cracked Magazine.
It's not a magazine. It's just Cracked.com.
I believe it was a magazine.
You're
at one time.
You're thinking Mad.
Wasn't Cracked I'm pretty sure Cracked was a thing.
I don't know.
We'll have somebody look it up. We got interns running around here. Somebody will tell me. But I came across an article. Mike said it in a nicer way. The way that the article said it was most unnecessary greatest hits albums of all time. The author of the article maybe thought that these artists or these bands weren't deserving enough of having a greatest hits album, or they didn't have enough hits to necessitate a greatest hits album. But I thought it would be interesting to take two albums from that list and compare them and choose a winner, get a little positivity going.
I can't speak for them because I only read the article in so much as the two albums that Dan and I ended up choosing. It seemed like they sort of ran on the concept of, these bands should be one-hit wonders. What are they doing with full greatest hits albums? Mm-hmm. And the article, it's a comedy website, and they write humorous articles, and that's, you know, number one on the list was the music of Shaquille O'Neal. So,
full disclosure, I owned 2 Shaquille O'Neal albums.
Did you own the best of?
I did not.
Oh!
I did not. I didn't make it that far.
He had 3 albums?
He had 4 albums, because best of was...
The fourth?
The fourth album,
That's
I believe.
That's insane.
Yeah. I stopped after the second one, courtesy of Columbia House.
Oh, man.
I stopped doing the Columbia House scam, where you would get, you know, CDs, end up getting CDs for like $5 a piece or something.
That's actually where some of the greatest hits albums I own came from, Columbia House.
I loved Columbia House.
That sounded wrong. It's not the greatest CDs I own. It's the CDs that are greatest hits albums I got from. And they're actually, I enjoy them quite a lot. I got the...
John Tesh. Best of John Tesh. That's what you were going to say.
That's just what my YouTube channel is. no, I've got James Brown and Black Sabbath, the Ozzy Years. Those
good
are
choice.
The two. They're good. Okay, so the two albums we chose were the best of Color Me Bad,
mm-hmm,
and the best of Young MC.
I believe it's the very best of Young MC. Is that correct?
I tried to look it up, and I thought it was just best of.
It's really hard to. It was really hard to find, actually. And unless you wanted to order like a used copy off Amazon for $2.
Okay, so not just that, but the one on Amazon only had 5 reviews. Mm-hmm. So even if it was, you know, available, I don't know if it's easy to get.
Can I just share real quick some of the other artists that we didn't go with?
Sure, I'm going to put the link to the article in the show notes. Because that's what I'm going to call them. But yeah, go ahead and give us a little taste
of that. Or we can have an intern do that. We've got The Best of Nelson, the Millennium Collection.
Nelson Mandela?
If you don't know. No,
Sings the Blues?
That would actually probably be better.
Yeah.
This was early 90s hair group, two brothers. I believe their father was...
Craig T. Nelson.
Not Coach. No. Ricky Nelson, who was on a TV show. We'll have an intern look it up. Interns are busy. I'm going to look it up right now.
Okay. While Dan's looking that up, I just wanted to sort of state that it sort of seemed that the writers of the article were a little harsh mm-hmm. on some of the albums, and I think the only reason I'm saying that is because I actually listened to them. I don't think that the artists themselves listened to the entire album of either of them because they're not bad. It's sort of a nostalgia ride, a look into the musical past of the 1990s and sort of these two different genres. So Young MC is definitely hip-hop, and then Color Me Bad was sort of pop, but then eventually turned into R&B. You want to go a little bit?
Yeah, I kind of had a hard time describing them. I didn't want to just use the Wikipedia description of Color Me Bad, and I kind of had it down as kind of R&B, but with some, you know, a lot of vocal harmonizing in it, and there was like some rap, but not really. It was like more like spoken word rap. Yeah. It wasn't like actual hip hop rap. It was kind of hard to, you know, put my finger on it.
Definitely started as a pop group.
Yeah.
In the traditional boy band sense.
Yeah.
Of the early 1990s.
I think 1990s. That's definitely what it was intended as, because that was around the time that New Kids on the Block was taken over the world in the early 90s, and then everybody kind of tried to say, well, we need to get our boy band out there, you know, the record companies, we need to get our version of the boy band out there so we can, you know, sell some records. And Color Me Bad's first album,
CMB
sold 6 million copies.
That's incredible,
which
by
is
the way.
And speaking of New Kids on the Block, a little anecdote here is that in Britain, Color Me Bad was the biggest selling boy band in 1991, ahead of New Kids on the Block.
That's sort of like a reverse British invasion.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
The American I wonder if they called that the American Revolution over there. Because it didn't hurt
they
anybody.
They don't talk about that anymore.
They talk about Benedict Arnold. They gave him his little statue.
Oh, so Ricky Nelson was the father of the Nelson boys. He was on The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
Don't look at me like I'm supposed to... No?
Ozzie
and Harriet, The Adventures
and
of
Ozzie. And he was also a famous musician... himself, and some of the other albums that were on this list, we had I believe Aaron Carter's most requested hits.
Yeah,
I don't know who was requesting them. It may have been clickbait, or
that's way over my head. I don't get that.
they pay people over.
Oh, clickbait.
Yeah, they
okay.
Pay people over in India.
I thought
to...
someone's name was Clip Bader.
Yes. Clip Baterson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know. He was on The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet.
Those are the same people that are subscribing to this podcast.
Hey, man. Bots sell tickets.
That's
all
right.
That's all I'm saying.
You said Shaquille O'Neal was on there. I believe The Best of John Tesh.
He was on there.
Was on there.
He'll sell out, though. That's the thing is, I don't think Cracked was, you know, it's a comedy podcast. This is a podcast. Comedy website where they write silly articles. So... for all we know, if I listened to all the albums on here, I'm sure we would find something redeemable about them. Because I definitely found something redeemable about these two albums.
Mm-hmm.
Are they on the list, by the way?
I believe...
Because it's a top 9.
Color Me Bad is number 4.
Okay.
Looks like Tone Loc, Wild Thing and Other Hits is number 5.
Wait for it.
Here we go. Oh, number 4. We thought about doing this was Bruce Willis, the Master Series. And I like how he puts like 4 of the top songs right on the cover, right next to his head. I believe 2 of them I know are just, he just flat out stole them, is Respect Yourself and Under the Boardwalk. Those are not his songs.
I think it's literally, hey, it's Bruce Willis Sings the Blues.
Yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia.
If he did a Die Hard song, I'd listen to it.
I wouldn't.
What?
No.
Come on.
Forevermore, The Greatest Hits of John Tesh was number three.
People love John Tesh.
Who?
Not okay. I didn't say I love John Tesh.
The Best of Young MC is number two. You're right, it is the best, not the very best.
Whew, that was close.
I'm still waiting for The Very Best of Young MC to come out. That's when he's going to put his... Because that man can truly rhyme.
That's what... So, one of the things that this Cracked article does, it finds the most humorous Amazon comment or review about the album, and Dan had sent me the track list of The Best of Young MC. It so happened that one of his screenshot had a user's comment, and it was pretty much, it was a cautionary comment, but it warned against buying the album, but it reminded everybody that, don't worry, this man can truly rhyme.
All caps. Yeah, so, I mean, I guess you'll have to listen to us and then listen to it, and you decide for yourself if he can truly rhyme or not.
No, they don't have to decide. We're making the choice for them.
All right, okay. I'm okay with that.
We have an informed opinion about Color Me Bad and Young MC, so you guys don't have to compare them, mm-hmm. Okay?
And then we're going to give you recommendations for more good stuff that you can listen to.
So strap in! Okay.
Get ready for a ride.
We're going to compare these two albums that are in different genres using four criteria that tell us what makes the best less-known greatest hits album. So, we broke those criteria down as song variety. Are you listening to the same song over and over again? They just changed the lyrics. Or are you listening to something new by the artist? Are they trying different things? Are they experimenting with instrumentation? Are they gotten more creative with the lyrics? Are they going to talk more about a different subject? Or are you pretty much just hearing the same thing over and over again, just at different lengths, different speeds, with a little bit different bass?
Yeah, there's a lot of artists out there that as soon as you turn on the radio, you know exactly who it is because they've kind of made careers out of making the same song with just slightly different tweaks. When I listen to somebody like Prince, though, somebody we talked about on a show before, and you can listen to the greatest hits of Prince, and you've got slow love ballads, you've got upbeat dance music, funky, you know, in between the sheets stuff.
Oh my.
it's just a crazy variety of, you know, roller coaster of variety that you would see on that album. So that was one thing that we wanted to look at to see if either of these artists actually varied the musicality at all, or if it was just an album full of, you know, which could be construed as one long continuous song.
And I find song variety, I'm a little bit more, I guess forgiving is the right word in this sense, where if it's just a regular album but a lot of the songs might be on the same subject or, you know, sound a mm-hmm. little bit similar, if it's just a regular album, doesn't seem like a big issue to me. But if it's a greatest hits album, I kind of want to hear the full spectrum of what this band can pull off.
Kind of comes back to why this article was written. Some people have come out with greatest hits albums. Like I've saw, like Carrie Underwood had one out the other day.
Okay.
And for me, I don't think, now granted she's had a few albums, but to me, I guess it just doesn't seem like she's been around that long.
I think that lends itself really well to, and I want you to keep going about that, but I want to segue into our next criteria, which is range of work on the album. And I think for any band to have a designation for a greatest hits album or, you know, that get approved, you're supposed to see some growth from where they were mm-hmm. to what they've become. So why don't you think that not being around for very long, let's say she puts out an album a year,
mm-hmm.
why do you think that she shouldn't have a greatest hits album? Because there's a lot of hits on
there.
She's
got a lot of hits. I guess,
agree with you, by the way.
I guess it's just when I used to get CDs from the library before I just started downloading
before
stuff.
You started getting Columbia House.
This was after Columbia House, before downloads. This was in the, we call
the dark
them,
ages.
We call them the gray years.
I just listened to everything on the radio and it was awful.
And I remember because it was hard to find AC/DC stuff that you could download in a legal way because mm-hmm. I believe they weren't on like Spotify. They still might not be on Spotify. I don't think they were on iTunes at the time. You know, like the Beatles weren't on iTunes.
iTunes
for
took a
time.
Long time for it to encompass what it does now.
But so I went to the library and I got an AC/DC. It was like a 3-disc set. I don't remember what it was called. but it had stuff all the way from the Bon Scott years mm-hmm. all the way up to Angus Young.
Angus Young's the guitar player. So he was always in it. It's Brian Johnson.
Brian Johnson, that's right. But it had, you know, you could truly see range and how the different singers, not only how they, you know, brought their style to the band, but how the band changed over the years, too. I think Aerosmith is another good example.
Absolutely. That's a great example. For the better or worse, they've definitely mm-hmm. changed.
Yeah, I mean, if you listen to their early stuff from, like, the 70s,
they were right up there with Led Zeppelin for a while.
Yeah, and they were like blues band almost back when they got started, and then they, you know, got hooked up with Run DMC for, you know.
Yeah, that was a great song.
Yeah, even like when Walk This Way came out originally, it wasn't really a hit, and then they hooked up with Run DMC, and all of a sudden they kind of changed their style a little bit. They grew. I don't want to say they matured, but they adapted. That's why they were still successful. They had that success in the 80s, and then they had the big album in the 90s.
The Armageddon.
And then even the huge, you know, song from Armageddon, and then, you know, they're still,
I think they,
you know, making, they just had an album that came out last year, I think.
Something that's interesting about them is, you were mentioning their blues roots, they sort of, almost in a cycle, they sort of went back to that
mm-hmm.
with... So, of course, it has a hilarious title, that's why I remember, but Honkin' on Bobo, where it's, they mm-hmm. go back to what they know, but they've learned a lot as artists and hopefully as songwriters, so.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a good example, just because you really, you could truly put 8-CD set or something together of their stuff and really see the genesis of how it changed. I think Elvis is another one too. He started off as a gospel guy.
Absolutely. He's textbook, like, adapting to his crowd.
I mean, you've got gospel Elvis, you've got, you know, 50s Elvis, you've got movie Elvis, you've
Vegas
got
Elvis.
Comeback Elvis, yeah. Fat Elvis.
Yeah. They're all good.
Yeah.
And that's what I think, that's what a greatest hits is, because you're going to have stuff that people like that doesn't deserve to be on a greatest hits album.
And there was the one Elvis album that I always kind of went back to was the, I think it was called Best of Artists of the Century.
Oh, wow.
And it had stuff, you know, all the way from the gospel stuff all the way up to, you know, when he was doing the shows in Vegas and, you know, Viva Las Vegas, and had the movie stuff in there, and it had, you know, the classic, you know, 50s stuff. And you really, truly see the change over the years. Not that it has to be a change, but you would hope to see some kind of range. And that's, I think, what we're looking at here in range of work.
Let's go on to criteria number three. It touches on the last two we were talking about. Which one qualifies as a greatest hits album, or we were talking about which one is more deserving of actually being called a greatest hits album. Dan, do you want to go into that a little bit? How is that different than the last two?
Yeah, I think we talked about In So Many Words, but when we were putting this together, whether or not this album needed to exist.
Exactly.
You know, whether or not they needed the record company and the artist felt the need to not necessarily go into the studio because the songs were already recorded, but go into the manufacturing of this album and putting it out there for consumption, whether it really needed to be done. So why am I here? That question there. Why is this album here? Which one is more deserving of being in existence on this planet?
I think, I don't know who gets to green light the idea of a greatest hits album, but I would imagine that the band that wins this or is awarded this criterion, sort of the person had a better pitch to whoever green lights that, where it's like, I think we should make a greatest hits album for Color Me Bad because X, Y, and Z. I think, and then, you know, Shark Tank style, the other guy, I don't know, maybe it's Master Cook or what. Cake Boss. It's Cake Boss. The guy on the other end is like...
Pit Boss. That's the one with the...
Shark, the sharks in the tank.
The short people, and they have sharks.
You're thinking of Little People, Big World.
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Catapult falls on him. Anyway, and then the guy for Young MC comes in, and he says, no, I think Young MC should get a very best of greatest hits album because of, you know, A, B, and C. And I think whoever deserves to win this Criterion had the better pitch to whomever.
And I mean, it could be lack of options too. If you're a record company and you're not a huge record company, or if you're a smaller division within a record company, and you're thinking of, okay, well, how can we
got to push units?
How can we make some money? They said, well, we own the catalog of Young MC. Hey, Young MC, can we put this together in a greatest hits? Sure, I'll get a little cut of that.
Yeah,
it could be, you know, who had the better pitch, but it also could be, you know, who had less options. You know, if you're in a, for example, like a Warner Brothers Records, and you own the catalogs of tons of great artists, you might not need to, you know, pull like a Color Me Bad or a Young MC or a Aaron Carter or a John Tesh or a Shaquille O'Neal or a Vanilla Ice or
NBA Records
or anybody like that.
In there.
And that, you were talking about the Cracked article, and they actually released a slightly updated version of that article, and it had mainly the same artist in it that we talked about, but there was one in there that I kind of took umbrage with, and they had the best of Belle Biv DeVoe.
Oh, we were just talking about him.
We were just talking. You're like, who sings Poison? Belle Biv DeVoe actually should have a greatest hits album. So, and I think if you read a lot of the comments on that, they got a lot of flack for that as well. You know, like I said, it's just, like you're saying, it's satirical. It's totally subjective.
It's probably also targeted at a crowd that doesn't know about it. Because, I mean, I thought it was a hilarious article, but I had never listened to any of that music. And then I listened to it, and I'm like, I don't think those guys should be so rough on those.
So had you heard of Color Me Bad before this?
No. Okay. Oh, come on.
See, I had.
Okay.
And I'll talk about that when we get to that.
Okay. CMB, that's their first album, came out in 1991. I was not listening to popular music until well after that.
I didn't know if you had heard of it, you know.
Only their hit song, which we're about to get to.
Okay.
Okay, and then our last criteria, as always, is re-listenability. So, which greatest lesser-known greatest hits album do you want to just play over and over again? All right, let's dive into alphabetically first, Color Me Bad. Dan has so much life experience that has been, I don't want to say tainted, let's say painted by Color Me Bad. Oh, by the way,
trees.
Color Me Bad spelled with two D's. Bad spelled with two D's.
Yeah, just so you know.
That's
you
how bad they are. They can't spell right.
Bad in like the Michael Jackson way?
Well, no, because that, I mean, then that would be one D and then there would be copyright infringement. Okay, anyway, what do you want to tell us about where Color Me Bad touched you? Point out on the dot.
Right here. So my sister was a huge Color Me Bad fan, and I'm 2 years younger than she is. I just turned 36. So
Mazel Tov.
Yeah, thanks. And so Color Me Bad, I think you said 91 was the first.
That's when
album.
CMB came out.
So I was 10, 11 years old when that came out, and when the first song was I Wanna Sex You Up, which starts off with the tick-tock, you don't stop.
By the way,
tick-tock, you don't quit.
I recognize tick-tock, you don't stop, so I put it into Google because I'm like, no way to Color Me Bad. Because I'd heard that way before, and I had not heard I Wanna Sex You Up before, so I looked it up. According to Google, Crisscross was the originator of that song, so I guess they sampled it. Or vice versa. I don't know. We'll have to look that one up. Okay, so anyway, that's how the song starts. This is definitely their number one single. If you've heard of Color Me Bad and you did not grow up with them, it's because of I Wanna Sex You Up.
Now, we were talking about that earlier. I thought it was Slick Rick, maybe.
Right. Did the TikTok, You Don't Stop.
And I...
Sample.
I while you're just saying that, I just looked it up, and we've got somebody said that was in Rapper's Delight, wasn't it? Somebody said Lottie Dottie Who Likes to Party by Slick Rick.
Okay.
So who knows? But somebody says De La Soul.
Oh, wow.
Who knows? Dougie Fresh, Slick Rick featuring Dougie Fresh. So I might have been on track with Slick Rick. Listen to yourself a little Slick Rick.
All right. Begrudgingly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Color Me Bad. So my sister was a huge fan. I asked her yesterday, I said, we're going to be recording this podcast. Do you got any like stories or anecdotal things you want to talk about? And she basically said, well, the only thing I can really tell you is that me and my friends went to go see Color Me Bad and Paula Abdul at Riverport Amphitheater in St. Louis.
That's a huge ticket.
Hollywood Casino Amphitheater is now called. It's been through several changes. And I believe that she said it was in either 91 or 92. She didn't remember.
So when they were exploding on the scene.
Exploding. She also saw New Kids on the Block at Busch Stadium. I think they were the first music act since the Beatles to sell out Busch Stadium. So just to tell you where the boy band, you know, phase was at in the early 90s. We got Color Me Bad touring with Paula Abdul, who's huge at the time as well. The other thing I remembered is they had a video that was supposed to come on, I think, after an episode of Beverly Hills 90210. Are they were going to be on Beverly Hills 90210?
They were definitely on it because that showed up in their filmography.
There was something like that. And I remember my sister was so excited, and she had to get the VHS tape out and make sure that the little...
Save it for posterity.
The little plug on the VHS tape was covered with some tape, because if it wasn't, you press record, it wasn't going to record. You know what I'm talking about? What was that? What is that?
It's like a failsafe. See, I thought it was if you activate that, then no one can tape over your stuff.
Right.
So she didn't want anybody to tape over 90210's special Color Me Bad episode, a very special episode with Color Me Bad.
I remember her getting so excited about that episode, and I think one of the songs that was on the Best of Color Me Bad was actually on the 90210 soundtrack. There was actually a...
What? We should get our hands on that. Said no one ever.
You probably could for a buck or two on Amazon.
I don't have that kind of money.
The Best of Color Me Bad, it was pulled from three studio albums and then one song from the 90210 soundtrack. I just remember her, she was so into it for about 6 months to a year, and then they kind of, you know, were overtaken by the next big thing. You know, there was a lot of acts in the 90s that, you know, came in like a ball of fire and then just kind of went away.
So,
you know,
I think that's the nature of a boy band that nobody tells the boy band, is that you're not going to be able to garner the same attention, the same crowd, probably two or three years into the future, which is why Justin Timberlake is wildly famous, because he is not singing the same way or about the same stuff anymore.
I think that's a good example of another person who has a good range of work. If you know, look at the things he's done, even like the satirical stuff that he's done, you know, I mean, that
Mother's
guy...
Mother's Day with Andy Samberg.
Yeah, he just does, and he does everything. You know, he does, you know, hip-hop stuff. He, you know, sings harmony vocals on the backgrounds of other people's stuff. He does ballads, he does slow jams, he does
pop music.
He did the NSYNC stuff. I mean, he's really shown a great range of abilities there. You found out some information about Color Me Bad, actually how they got discovered.
I would like to... None of this is from my history. This is all what I found.
You were there.
All my research.
When it happened.
Yeah, I was 4 or 5 years old, just jamming out to some CMB. Okay, so I just wanted to put that forward, that this is all coming secondhand. So they received their breakthrough in 1989, Oklahoma, when they were performing at the Penn Square Mall Multiplex, and they were spotted by, you guessed it, John Bon Jovi.
John Tesh.
John Bon Jovi. And it said they were spontaneously hired to open for the band the following night after delivering an impromptu performance.
Yeah, so I don't know if they...
Do you know how awful your life would be if people just came up to you like, hey, can I work for you? Because I'm going to start singing and dancing right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a lot of people out there that are not talented at singing and dancing.
Yeah,
and I think...
There's two sitting right here.
Whoa. Whoa.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
I think together we're okay.
Yeah.
We're
dancing?
Average. Yeah. Okay. Both.
Yeah, I think we're probably average at everything we do.
Together.
Yeah.
Singular,
yeah.
We might be less than average.
We're an average man.
The definition of average is together we're not that...
Yeah.
We're not that bad.
Yeah.
I don't think... We might have gotten picked up by John Bon Jovi.
Maybe. I mean, maybe Richie Sambora, but I don't know about...
Who's that?
That's the guitarist.
Oh!
He was with John Bon Jovi when they got discovered.
I just assumed people wouldn't know who that is, so I left him out of the article.
Richie Sambora is together with Heather Locklear.
Another 90210 connection.
There you go.
Full circle, guys.
It was actually Melrose Place, but...
Oh, God.
Whatever. But that was a spinoff of 90210.
I didn't even know that.
Oh, my God!
Okay, so...
It blew your mind.
I can't stress enough. Most 90s pop culture is over my head.
Mm-hmm. And it's right up my alley.
God, that should be the name of just... That's a terrible podcast.
Yeah. Over Mike's head and right up Dan's alley.
Bumper stickers coming soon mm-hmm. to the iStore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's how they got their start. I want to jump to what happened to them after their Color Me Bad years. Is there anything you want to put in the middle in there?
Not really. I think we've pretty much covered, you know, they had this really meteoric rise. I mean, selling 6 million copies.
It's insane.
That's...
Especially because the circulation back then was... They weren't really in the golden era of selling CDs mm-hmm. or selling cassettes, but 6 million's a lot today, and that... You know, more power to them. That's awesome that
yeah,
they achieved that.
I mean, with all the digital stuff now and the ways that people get music without actually paying for it, you probably won't see big numbers like that on a regular basis. You still see every once in a while, especially like when Michael Jackson passed away and when Prince passed away. I think said Prince sold more in like a 12-hour period than everybody else had sold in... like the last 6 months or something
well,
like
also,
that.
Well, also, 91, that's before, you know, you get your major Best Buys, your Circuit Cities, all that stuff. And so people are just buying this, mm-hmm. like, at record stores.
Right.
That's awesome for them.
Yeah.
So I'm going to fast forward to 1998, which is when one of their members, Kevin Thornton, I don't know which member is which, but I just got a little bit about each of them. So Kevin Thornton left to pursue ministry. And I just imagine that there's somebody sitting in his congregation like, isn't that the guy who's saying, I want to sex you up? What's he doing up there talking about, you know, values and all that stuff? Okay.
Just because he wants to sex you up doesn't mean that he's not a nice person.
Anyway, he later released a Christian solo album in 2005 that features, quote, hip-hop rap material with gospel and soul music. So if that's your bag, check it out. But it's not mine, because that sounds awful.
So apparently Kevin Thornton was the one in the band that kind of looks like Ludacris.
Okay,
that
makes sense.
Does that help you?
That, yes, of course that helps.
Does that help you? I'm showing you a picture right now.
It's the not three white guys.
But it's one that looks like Luda.
Yeah. No, I got it.
Luda.
He's kind of got the duck face going there.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so that's one guy. And then Brian Abrams... did some work with the Insane Clown Posse
mm-hmm.
on one of their songs.
Is he a
called,
juggalo?
By definition, you almost have to be, right? If you collaborate, if you collabo with them, right? So he did a song called Truth or Dare, which was released on the Psychopathic Records compilations, Psychopathics from Outer Space 3 and featuring Freshness. This is in 2011.
Wow.
Well, 2007 and 2011, respectively. Those are two different albums. And then lastly, in 2012, Brian Abrams brought on his other Color Me Bad man, Mark Calderon, and they collaborated on another Insane Clown Posse song on the Mighty Death Pop's White Pop version bonus CD called Mike E. Clark's Extra Pop Emporium. And
I stopped listening. I'm sorry.
The song was a soft R&B remix of the song Ghetto Rainbows.
Wow.
So.
Well, I'm looking up Brian Abrams right now. He's the one that looks like George Michael.
Okay.
And apparently he's kind of fallen on hard times here.
No, man. I just told you. He's a, he's a juggalo and he's still bringing in that Skrilla.
Well, he's a juggalo that's using a walker now. Because
they're on tour today. They're still touring.
Okay. Are you sure it's him? Are you sure he's
yeah.
the one?
Brian Abrams, Mark Calderon, and somebody else. Oh, no, it's just those two. I don't think the minister's still touring.
Okay. And then Mark Calderon is not the one that looks like Kenny G. So he's the one that looks like the rapper Snow. And I was trying
I don't
to,
know
I
who these people
explain
are.
Explain to you who Snow was. Listen to Snow's Informer. It'll change your life.
That's a bold statement. Okay, mm-hmm. sorry. So that's the history of Color Me Bad. Do you want to talk about this album a little bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of the things I noticed when I listened to this is the song Wildflower was one that when I heard it, it sounded very familiar, and I knew I hadn't heard it from a Color Me Bad album.
I don't know. It made a serious impact on your life, bro.
I mean, I guess it was played so much in the adjacent room to me growing up, by my sister. So I looked the song up, and turns out it was a cover of a 1973 song by the band Skylark.
Which, of course,
Mike, you have the best, very best of Skylark. I only have it on vinyl.
No, 8-track.
Oh, darn it. And I had heard that song covered, I think, by the OJs. And I think that's not OJ Simpson. And
that'd be a pretty good album.
Yeah.
All OJ covers.
No.
He might have a voice. You don't know.
No. Well, he's got a murdering hand. I know that.
Well, he's in jail now because of that book he wrote.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. So I remember the song Wildflower by the OJs. But where I really heard it, and I looked at it, the genesis of the song a little bit more.
The Genesis song?
No.
Bill Collins?
No, we're not. We'll never do a Genesis.
I'm gonna
song.
We're gonna
Peter
do
Gabriel Genesis, maybe? I don't know.
All of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm kind of. I like Peter Gabriel. I can't. God, I hate Phil Collins.
Susu Studio. You're gonna look me in the face and say that's a bad song?
I'm looking at you in the face right now. It's a bad song. But Wildflower is actually kind of the sample track for Tupac's Shorty Wanna Be a Thug from the All Eyes on Me double album. Which I believe came out in 1995?
Dan listens to this album before he goes to bed, and it's the first thing he hears when he wakes up, because he talks about it more than I think he talks about any other album.
It is one of the greatest, 1996, it is one of the greatest, not just rap albums,
right,
but albums of all time.
He's got some range, man.
It is the definitive, you know, Tupac collection, double disc. It's awesome. But yeah, there's a little connection there between Color Me Bad and Pac, which I thought was pretty cool.
And I would have put $100 saying there's no connection between those two. If I'm a betting man, I would not have assumed that connection existed.
One of the things I showed you before we started recording was the Beavis and Butthead clip of them watching the I Wanna Sex You Up video.
Which I did not watch the video because I was not a huge fan of the song, so I just thought that would make me angrier.
So it's pretty funny if you guys want to look it up on YouTube. It's just like a minute long. They've got some pretty funny comments about early 90s boy bands and the look and feel of the videos and the song. It's pretty cool, but the thing I noticed about the album, or the thing that caught me about the album, is that I liked it more than I thought I was going to like it. And I've liked it more than you did, because I've been singing it all day, and
yeah,
you've been telling me to stop.
And so I'm going to be completely honest. I did not expect to enjoy listening to it at all. But it wasn't that I didn't hate listening to it. I just would not have chosen this. It's not my kind of music. So listening to it would not have been my first choice, but it's not bad. We cannot talk about Color Me Bad anymore. There's nothing to talk about.
Got to do our favorite songs and least favorite songs.
Are we there?
Got to.
Do you want? Okay, we'll do our least favorite and favorite now.
Yeah.
Okay, so my favorite song from the best of Color Me Bad was Thinking Back.
Uh-huh.
I found that when I just wing it, I very poorly articulate why I like or dislike a song. So I wrote some notes, and I'm just going to read those. I found Thinking Back. Back to when you were mine. When we were one, oh, love was fine. Had some strong harmonies, which I think if you're going to have more than one person in a band sing lead vocals or take turns singing, that you need to get some harmonies in there, because that's my favorite thing to hear, especially when those voices can hit some different octaves and reach different heights and depths. So I thought they really got the harmonies down strong on that. I also enjoyed that they didn't overly muzak the background music, because there are some songs on this album that have heavy Casio keyboard synthesizing going on, and some really crappy, you know, drum machines doing some crazy, terrible stuff in the background. And I also just thought it was a good balance between their 80s pop phase and their R&B phase, where it's not trying to overreach their bounds of what they can achieve. So I enjoyed Thinking Back the most.
My favorite song was All for Love. Which was one of the bigger hits on the record. I love I Want to Sex You Up.
Really?
I love it.
Really?
I love it.
All right.
It's corny, but it's so damn catchy. And like you said about the harmonies are really good in it. And I showed you a little clip of the video before we got started. You check out the video. Catch some bright outfits, some awesome 90s dance moves. The guy that looks like Kenny G, you know, up at the front singing his butt off while the three guys are dancing their butts off in the back. They're really working it, man. They're really trying. They look like they're having a really good time doing it. So I hope they made some money, you know, because there was a lot of bands, you know, back then were so big, but they ended up broke because they got crappy record deals or shady managers.
Well, it's also like you were saying, this is the era of the boy band. So if you get picked up, you're solid, but you need to distinguish yourself.
Right.
And I think so many people would rather just stand in front of a camera and look cool rather than like possibly look foolish in 10 years when people are like, oh, look at those clothes or look at those stupid dance moves. But these guys are like, no, we're going to go all out. And
they owned it.
We're going to sell 6 million CDs.
So okay. I hope they're set for life on that.
There's no way. They were way too young to make all that money. They cannot be that successful.
And
this one guy's working for Insane Clown Posse, okay?
And you hear about, you hear just these horror stories of these, you know, famous artists that say that they didn't make, you know, or they made like 5 cents per record that they sold or something like that. I mean, 6 million nickels, that's a lot of nickels.
I can't do the math there.
But
30 grand?
Somebody will do it. We got an intern here. That got an old Texas Instruments graphing calculator. He'll do the math for us. What it kind of reminded me of when I was listening to this album, it sounded a lot like Boyz II Men with less vocal range.
I could definitely see that.
It kind of,
it's what they were aspiring to, but they couldn't pull it off.
Yeah. Right. It's like they made do with what they had, and what they had is, you know, better than 99% of the population. Boyz II Men was, I mean, just the harmonies just amazing, and then they had the guy that come in, hey girl,
right,
and they even had some of that in here too. You know, somebody would, you know, come in, and sometimes they were even saying it in Spanish.
I don't want to even.
And I know
get into
we're
going
to get into it in a second, because I'm pretty sure that's going to be your least favorite song.
You're right.
And but that's what it reminded me of, because they had you know, Boyz II Men. The first song that I really remember them was Motown Philly, which was more upbeat dance, hip hop, and R&B, which they didn't normally do. They were mostly the ballad guys,
right?
You know, the slow ballad guys. You know, End of the Road, I'll Make Love to You, things like that. They showed that they have the ability to do that, and I think that's what Color Me Bad did too. They had some ballads in there. They had the more upbeat stuff like I Want to Sex You Up and All for Love. Nice. It was a nice mix of that. But I think that it was kind of like, I don't want to say a poor man's Boyz II Men, but that's kind of,
they're just the boys. They hadn't achieved the men part.
Yeah, it's like I didn't
it's
want
boys
to...
two question mark?
Yeah.
Or boys ellipsis? It wasn't boys the number two.
Yeah.
In Roman numerals.
So I don't want to, you know, downgrade them by saying that, you know, you're trying to be Boyz II Men and you're not, because I mean this
something to achieve though.
Yeah, I mean, but I was probably around the same time too that Boyz II Men's first album came out, but I just think that was like early 90s, and I think that's what people were trying to do. They made the best use of what they had. They used all the tools that were in their belt. So that was my favorite song.
After you just built them up, let me talk about my least favorite song, which sucked.
Which I actually kind of like.
It's Adore Mia Moore. And That's how they say it, because I don't know if they don't know that Spanish is a different language, so that you should, like, emphasize different syllables. You know, I can't speak a foreign language, but I don't pretend to sing it on an album that's being sent out to people.
See, I do.
Right, and how's that working out for you? Sell 6 million yet?
Not bad. I've sold pretty close to 6 million albums.
More than me, that's all I gotta say. I didn't like that. It's the quintessential boy band song, which is, we're just gonna sing, it's gonna be about an anonymous girl, all of our fans will think we're singing about them, it has no substance, it has no life experience, it has no, I mean, it's a cookie cutter boy band song. So I think this is just their version of a pop song, and I thought, because this is a greatest hits album and they do have songs that I enjoyed listening to on this album, I thought they could have done better.
My least favorite song was Color Me Bad.
No! That's their hardest core.
And somebody's saying right now, that's the name of the band, stupid. Yes. That's not the name of the song.
And then I would please address their attention to the song Bad Company off of the album Bad Company, uh-huh, featured in the film Bad Company by the band Bad Company.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, that's just, you're just insisting upon yourself at that point. Here's the reason why I didn't care for that song. That song was basically set to a melody, but it was basically just them introducing themselves.
By the way, who's Spider-Man?
I believe he's one of the producers. It's Spider-Man with a Y.
Yipes.
And they mentioned Spider-Man. Like, did we mention Spider-Man? We got Spider-Man.
They say it so many times.
They said it a lot. They said it a lot. And that's why I didn't like it, because... Spider-Man's in the house. Giant Freak is in the house. Brian's in the house. Yo, Kev's in the house. It, you know, it kind of had a catchy beat, but it kind of reminded me of, I talked about the Sugar Hill Gang on a previous podcast and how much I liked the Sugar Hill Gang as far as old school rap. There are times when the Sugar Hill Gang can just say, hey, we're the Sugar Hill Gang. He's so-and-so, this is what he does. He's so-and-so, this is what he does. He's so-and-so, he's on the mic. He's so-and-so, he's on the wheels of steel. And,
well, ones and twos.
Say hi to his grandma and his aunt and her uncle. And she brought a quiche. And this is our family. And then the song is over. So they basically, they introduce themselves. They explain what their band's purpose is.
They're here to color us bad, by uh-huh. the way. We're here to color them bad.
They tell what record label they're on. They name their record label.
Contractually obligated to mention our record label.
They list all of the producers, including Spider-Man.
And it's not the Spider-Man you're thinking of, guys.
It's not Tobey Maguire.
Or...
it's Andrew Garfield.
He would be like 1 year old.
No, it's just, the song just kind of sucks.
Yeah. Oh, and it's what they finish the album on.
Right.
So if you have I Want to Sex You Up and Color Me Bad on the same greatest hits album, I would definitely lead with the crappier of the two and end on this on a high note.
Mm-hmm.
They did the opposite. Way to go, morons.
So, I mean, majority of the album, I enjoyed. That song was just kind of, I was just kind of waiting for it to get over. It's like, all right, I know who you are. You've introduced yourselves individually by name. You've introduced what the name of your band is. You've introduced why you have formed and what you are bringing into the world. You've even told us what record label you're on.
Just in case.
And it said something. I said, you can buy us on Giant Records. I'm guessing, I didn't know if that was like Tower Records, like an actual store, or they were actually talking about like large LPs. You can buy us on Giant Records. I don't know what they were talking about. It just seems like they were trying to fill out an album. So that was the song Color Me Bad by the band Color Me Bad, originally on CMB right. album, which stands for
Cornmeal's Burgers.
Best. Cornmeal's Best.
That was way better. Okay. All right. We're going to take
Cornmeal Burgers.
We're going to take a quick break and talk about Young MC. We've exhausted Color Me Bad. So let's move on to the youngest of the MCs, Young MC.
I believe he's middle-aged MC now.
I couldn't put a tack down on that. He was recently in concert, right? You were going to hit him up on Twitter? How'd that work out? Work out real good?
I just forgot to do it.
Oh, we're going to have to edit that in post.
I didn't. I was going to do it, and then I was like, I don't care. But
what? So Young MC got his name from his last name, which is Young. He was born Marvin Young in 1967. Mm-hmm. So he is just about 50 years old.
Bust a move.
The youngest of the MCs. He is an English-born American singer, rapper, and actor.
Bust a move.
I did a little research on him because I don't have any life experiences that Young MC touch.
Bust a move.
There you go. I just want to throw this out. He earned a degree in economics from the University of Southern California, which is actually when he met the two guys from the record company Delicious Vinyl. Mm. So he was in college when he got his record deal, and that's when he started actually recording. The album we're looking at, which is called the Young MC Best Of, 1999, and his first album, Stone Cold Rhyming, came out in 1989. So you can sort of contextualize that when it was in time. So in 2002, which is way after all of this, he appeared as a contestant on the Weakest Link Rap Star Edition.
Yeah, I think I remember watching
that. He won.
Yeah, of course he won.
He beat...
He's going against, like, Nate Dogg and...
Nate Dogg, Run DMC, DJ Quick, DeBrat. I'm not even going to say these people's names. I don't know any of them. But anyway, he won, and he donated all of his winnings to the Humane Society.
Aww.
So that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then in 2005, he was on Celebrity Fit Club 3, and he won that.
If you put Young MC on a reality show, he's going to win.
He lost the most weight, and he was apparently the most skilled at playing Weakest Link, which is not just a trivia game show. You also have to have sort of a survivor instinct and know how to play it. This episode is clearly brought to you by Weakest Link, now available on DVD and streaming.
I thought it was brought to you by Twizzlers because I'm so hungry. We had a long day today.
The longest of days, according to Young MC.
We had a long day today, and we didn't get to eat until very late.
Like 4 o'clock.
And we had breakfast like at 9. It was a very weird day of moving heavy things from a couple of wimpy men who get tired very quickly. And so we've got my dog just heavy breathing.
Almost, and it's actually me, Dan's covering.
Yeah, and it's
thanks for covering.
Crypto, my yellow lab, is head is almost she's so big, her head's almost up to the microphone. She's breathing directly into the microphone. And then I've got Twizzlers right next to the microphone that I keep trying to sneak when Mike will talk. So, and then when he kind of throws it to me, I'm kind of mid bite. Try to eat real quick. But
so do you have any Young MC? You had a wealth of knowledge about Color Me Bad.
Okay,
can you tell me something about Young MC that I didn't know?
I might be able to tell you. I don't know if you know this or not. I've talked to you about Tone Loc before.
Oh yeah, the Wild Thing.
Wild Thing and Funky Cold Medina.
I wouldn't have been able to say it.
Funky Cold Medina.
Cold as
cold.
Okay.
Yeah, Funky Cold Medina.
Okay, Tone Loc.
Tone Loc, if you don't know who that is, he is one of the detectives in Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Good for him.
He's the one with the voice like this. Hey, Ace. Ace, don't do that, Ace. So that's Tone Loc, who actually does, I think, the post-credit song for Ace Ventura, Pet Detective also. But he had two huge hits with Wild Thing and Funky Cold Medina that were... played so much at the roller skating rink when I went there, when my fat butt would go to the roller skating rink and none of the girls would skate with me because I was so fat. So
what is this podcast becoming?
Look at me now, ladies. Oh, you can't because it's a podcast.
I'll have Dan's photos up because he sent me 10.
Uh-huh.
I'll have those up on the
and
on the
all
store.
And they're all of my nether regions.
It's going to be like, it's going to be a puzzle you'll have to solve.
Right.
And then when you solve it, you can see his junk.
Right. That's your reward. Young MC wrote Wild Thing and co-wrote Funky Cold Medina.
Wow.
So that's... I don't know. I might have that backwards. I mean, he may have totally wrote one and then co-wrote the other one. But he either wrote or co-wrote both of those hits for Tone Loc.
Okay.
Before he, you know, had his own success. And Stone Cold Rhymin' was 1989. That had the biggest hit, of course, Bust a Move.
Which is, that's a good song.
It's a very good
Let's
song.
Let's all slow down for a second. You know, we're getting ahead of ourselves. It's a good song.
It's a very good
this
song.
This man.
It holds up. To
truly
he
rhyme.
He can truly rhyme. I would say if I was going to put it, if I was going to write that, I'd probably put truly in all capital letters.
So that was you. Okay.
That was me.
The Amazon user,
Young MC,
I'm Dan Rhino.
Young MC fan, Rhino 42. But, you know, you've probably heard Bust a Move, even if you are older than us or younger than us, because it was, when I looked at the history of that song, it's been in so many soundtracks, movie soundtracks, TV shows.
I think there's a video
films.
Game called Bust a Move.
There is, yeah.
But I think it's like Snood, or is it like Dance Dance Revolution?
I thought it was more of a dancing.
Okay.
A dancing game, but it's got like it's.
And you can
like
only dance to Bust a Move, right? That's my.
God, I don't know. But I don't think you cannot dance to Bust a Move. I mean, it's played at weddings.
It's,
and
it's an imperative. He's not saying, "Oh, I busted a move." It's, "Hey, you, stop looking at me and bust a move."
Bust a move.
Yeah.
I remember there was an episode of Scrubs. My wife might remember that. She just walked in and she's upset because her book came in the mail and it's bent. This is
corner is
bent. We may have to take a break and deal with this
and
issue.
And bust a move.
I'm gonna bust a move on over there and comfort my wife in just a second here. But there was an episode of Scrubs where there was a Young MC impersonator named Old MC.
Are you sure it wasn't just
I don't think it
Young
was
MC.
I don't think it was really him.
Oh, what was he doing? They couldn't get him on Scrubs?
Come on. I don't know. And then but he didn't really sing or dance or anything. All he did was say bust a move. Bust a move. And one of the characters is having a conversation with him, like asking for life advice, and he says something like, "Old MC, I really don't know what to do." He said, "Bust a move." And so
still,
you know,
rings true.
It does. I mean, just the fact that you hear that at weddings, and then like the first couple like beats of that, I can't even like make those, like I can do TikTok, you don't stop. All right, he says, "Bust it," and then something like that. I try my best.
Nailed it.
But it's such a cool like intro. We all know that man can truly rhyme.
It's a
very good song, and I'm sure, I mean, he is going to be making residuals off that, you know, his family will be long after he's gone, because it just holds up, and it's something they're still using car commercials and
and
things like that. It's something that's going to be around forever, and that was on first appear on the Stone Cold Rhymin' album in 1989. We found out about this because of the Cracked article, is that Stone Cold Rhymin came out in 1989. He had three albums.
Right, three more albums.
Between Stone Cold Rhymin and The Best of Young MC in 1999. None of his albums ever had as much commercial success as Stone Cold Rhymin did.
And then he put out albums after that.
Right.
1999 is when The Best Of came out.
So we've got Stone Cold Rhymin, which definitely have some songs on there that could be, construed as hits.
Yeah.
And, you know, would be on a Best Of or a Greatest Hits compilation. But he had three albums after that. Now, Stone Cold Rhymin had 13 tracks on it. The Best Of Young MC has 10 tracks on it. And all of those 10 tracks, every single one of those 10 tracks comes from Stone Cold Rhymin. So, the Best of Young MC is essentially Stone Cold Rhymin minus three songs. That's where things got very hazy for me, because are you telling me that none of the songs that he came out on any of those other three albums were worthy of getting stuck on this album? It's only 10 songs.
And you got rid of three because they're not considered the best hits.
You've got room. If it's a 10 track CD, you've obviously got room to cram some more on there.
Because you did before.
You did. You crammed three more on there. Well, granted, one of them was like 45 seconds long.
Yeah.
I think
it would be more outrageous if they took off Bust a Move. If they're like, no, I think he can stand alone without it.
I'm going to pick on my dad here for a second because I always do. And I even told him the other day, he probably doesn't listen to the podcast. He doesn't care.
He downloads it, though.
We're not good enough for him.
Counts it.
But, yeah, it counts as his downloads, like clickbait. I download, but I don't listen to it. You know, he was the one who I told you made the best of his version of the Best of the Bee Gees album and had like 30 tracks on it because he used this like super high capacity, you know, CDR.
It's like the MP3
CD. I don't know what he did, but Staying Alive wasn't on there. There was no room for it on there. There's no room for Staying Alive on there. I think he even made a Best of Fountains of Wayne album and didn't put Stacey's Mom on there. I was like, you son of a gun. I'm pretty sure that if my dad made a Best of Young MC, he wouldn't put
Bust a Move
on there because, oh, that's when he sold out. You know,
His first album.
I liked him before he got big. But it's so weird that this was a Best of album when there was more albums to pull from. And not only that, but, I mean, why not just re-release Stone Cold Ryman is like a 10-year anniversary edition or something like that. And that would be kind of cool. You know, they re-release things. It's like, you know, they put a different, you know, cover on it. They, you know, fix up the audio a little bit, you know, remaster the audio a little bit, maybe throw a couple
unreleased songs.
Or a couple remixes on there. You know, sometimes they'll have like current artists or current DJs remix old songs and put those on there. It's just kind of a, you know, cool connection of generations. But it was so weird
that they didn't do that.
No, they didn't. They just took three off and said, oh, new album, Best of Young MC.
Let's talk about our favorite and least favorite songs.
Okay. Your favorite song?
My favorite song was Nonstop. I'm dusting MCs like Ghostbusters dust ghosts. I wrote a little record for the hip and the hop. My name is Young, the record's called Nonstop. You did. Nonstop for the rhythm, nonstop for the rhyme. Nonstop for non-stop, the people non-stop. Who are right on time. Nonstop for the treble, nonstop for the bass. I thought that he had the strongest analogies. Just, I thought that his rhyming seemed the least forced in there. It was also probably the fastest he was rapping, or one of the fastest he was rapping. He wasn't just talk rapping, which pops up in his generation of rap. And
well,
a couple
he can truly rhyme.
Okay, but I'm not going to argue that. You call that spitting, you know?
I call it spitting.
That's
because
with the G? Oh, that man was spitting very well at the rap concert.
He was spitting those lyrics at the local rap concert.
And then I also enjoyed the kind of funky beat that they put on that one. What was your favorite song off of the Best of?
My favorite song was I Let Him Know.
Okay.
And the thing I like about Young MC, as we talked about a little bit before we started recording, is that he doesn't curse or anything on his albums. And it's not that saying that like I'm anti-cussing or anything like that. I'm just saying that he can do it and not sound stupid.
Right.
When he does it.
Or forced.
Right.
Or shackled.
Right. He doesn't sound like he's constrained. He just sounds like, I rap very well. I can rap very fast. And he even mentions that on one of the songs. He goes, I can slow it down like other rappers do, you know, but I don't have to because I'm better than you.
Right.
And
putting them on blast.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I can be like the rest of you guys, but I'm going to do my own thing because I'm the young MC.
The youngest of the MCs.
And on I Let Him Know, I can't really tell you why I like that song the best, but I'm just going to read some of the lyrics.
Struck you.
Basically him saying, like, all the other rappers do it this way, but I'm better than them. If they were this, I'm this. You know, if they're bronze, I'm gold.
Right. That's what I think when rappers of his ilk, I think the best is, my example of him is, like, Childish Gambino. He does just a hilarious job of coming up with analogies that span popular culture, different generations. He talks about how his crew should be canceled like Freaks and Geeks. I think that's clever. And he's like, you get sloppy drunk, I stay whiskey neat. You're like, that's clever. Like, I would not have come up with that, but it fit, like, well-placed analogies and well-thought-out stuff. And I think when you're about to list a couple of those,
uh-huh.
way. I guess I'm just like Burger King because you have it your way. You know it makes me delighted. You think I'm a rhyming writer, so next time I have a party, I'll make sure that you're invited to the jam of the year. I'll hold it right here, and after all is said and done, I like to make it quite clear that I came here tonight to have some fun. My name is Young MC, back with this MC Young. I let him know.
They're clever. They're well thought out.
Very clever.
They're not lazy. They're not forced into a song because they rhyme with the thing that he mentioned mm-hmm. previously. Okay. Release upon us the wonder that is Young MCs.
All right. I let them know.
I let them know.
If every rapper was a comic, I'd be making you laugh. If every rapper was a worker, I'd be chief of the staff. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 10 and a half.
Dan loves talking about scale-breaking quality.
I love numerical scale rap. If every rapper was a lion, I'd be king of the beast. If every rapper was a cop, I'd be chief of police. If every rapper was a soldier, I would be Rambo. If every rapper was a Hawaiian, I would be Don Ho. The Hawaiianist of Hawaiian crooners, if you will.
And they're like, or
balladeer.
That's if the you top. Will. Who else are you going to be?
Yeah, he's the top Hawaiian.
Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Because you know who he is.
Yeah, because I've heard of him. Thought it was awesome. Yeah. I just think it was so cool. So what about your least favorite?
My least favorite was...
Don't say Bust a Move.
Stone Cold Buggin'.
Mm-hmm.
Which was... So Dan mentioned the one that was 45 seconds. That's this one. This is a minute and 45 seconds.
Okay.
It's telling the story of when he got married and divorced...
She took me to court to have it litigated. A judge and a jury, that's how it operated. The jury went away and they deliberated. Then she took all of my money, had a house renovated. I felt so poor and so humiliated because of a fight that I instigated. But I got my money back.
And it is, of this album, definitely his. There's like no cool boasting. There's no clever analogies. It's just sort of him sort of stumbling, rhyming through this thing. I think it's supposed to be funny, but, I mean, he's very creative, and this just seemed poorly put together.
My least favorite song was My Name is Young.
I'm ready to bust around, so I'm not checking out party people. There's a story to tell. It isn't about Humpty Dumpty or the former Bindigel. It isn't about Pinocchio or Alice in Wonderland. I'm talking about the funky rapper who's the greatest man. My name is Young.
It kind of reminded me, and maybe this is just a thing you have to put on your best of album, but it reminded me of my least favorite song for the Color Me Bad album, which was Color Me Bad, where they basically just said who they were and who their record label was and who the producers were. Spider-Man, of course.
Oh, yeah. That's
I don't know if you knew that. They said
it slipped my mind.
They said it about 17 times, and I know it takes
like a 45-second like span of time.
18 for it to really sink in with you, but... He basically was just saying who he is and what he does. I don't know if he mentioned his record label, but...
He might not have had one at that point.
They even had, like, a pre-recorded, like, voice of generic crotchety white guy going, "What did you say your name is?" And he goes, "My name is Young." "What did you say your name is?" "My name is Young." I'm like, okay. It kind of reminded me of Master P and stuff like that, that just awful rap from the 90s that is like... make him say, my name is P. Make him say, just, did I tell you to make him say, huh? Did I tell you?
Let me tell you again.
And so it was just, I don't know, maybe that's just, you know, classic fodder that you have to put on the album. If you're buying this Greatest Hits album, you might as well know who it is.
But I thought that usually that's what, like,
my name is Young.
The cover takes care of that.
Bust a Move.
You're right. All right, let's get to our criteria, which we haven't touched yet. Okay, Dan, let's dive into song variety. Which lesser known greatest hits album had the most song variety?
Go in thinking I know who's going to win, and then we go through the criteria, and then I'm always severely shocked by what was the better album overall based on our criteria.
Okay.
I gave it to Color Me Bad.
You have to.
Yeah.
Young MC, it's one album.
It is.
And, okay, there's a couple different speeds of his mm-hmm. rapping. He seems very young.
I can slow it down.
He
like
seems
the rest of the
very, I mean, the content between Principal's Office and, you know, the two of our favorite songs, that seems kind of different, you know?
Yeah. Principal's Office got a really good video that goes with it, too. I think it won, like, best rap video or something by MTV.
Really?
That, like 1990, yeah.
Oof. It's, all right. It, it low standards back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, there was. It kind of reminds me of like Slick Rick had raunchy, you know, versions of like storytelling about his day, but Young MC kind of had a pretty cool video that went with that. But I went with Color Me Bad on that one, and you, I'm guessing you went with Color Me Bad as well.
Yes. Okay. I mean, there's no variety.
I agree. And Color Me Bad had some dancier stuff, had some slower stuff, you know, had, you know, vocal harmonies, had some more hip-hoppy.
Yeah, there's R&B. I mean, even though we didn't like Color Me Bad's CMB off of CMB, on their greatest hits of CMB, it was a different kind of song. It was mm-hmm. a different variety of yep. song than the rest of them on there.
You're exactly right.
All
right,
let's move on to range of work that's displayed on the album.
Color Me Bad.
Oh, me too. Here's just the weeniest of arguments for Young MC. You could definitely tell that when he wrote the Principal's Office song, like, he had a collection of songs, and I think he was rapping other, you know, underground or, like, you know, locally or at open mics or whatever before he got signed, because he wrote a song about... This is clearly like the life of a middle schooler, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and he was in college when he got signed, so I think he, you know, this is some of his earlier stuff, so in that capacity, this is sort of like gives a snapshot of his career from, you know, his early days to when this got produced, but it still doesn't stand out. It's no. There's no range. I mean, that was not good, and then he has songs that are better, so... So why should Color Me Bad work? Just Young MC fail.
I mean, it was pulled from so many different parts of their career. I mean, it was the initial phase when they came in and kind of came in, like I said, like a ball of fire, and then kind of fizzled out and came back with an album that was well received by critics but not bought by the public. And then they had another album later on, Awakening, I think, which was like in the late 90s, and they were, you know, they had obviously been through the whirlwind of, you know, touring around the world and things like that, and things were a lot more mellow, and they were kind of just, you know, getting back to the music. It was pulled from different parts of their career, and you saw a little bit of a difference in how the songs were arranged and how they sounded. There was, you know, they're never going to, you know, go from being like R&B group to like a ska group or a reggae group.
That would be crazy.
Calling me bad, man. But I think the fact that they pulled from different parts of their career, I think, gave it a better range of work, whereas Young MC really only pulled from one part of his career. It was actually his only album that really sold
right.
anything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, like we said, very strange.
I liked how you can see the... Well, I'll call it the maturation, like from the Adore Me Amore, which I just thought was crappy, and it, you know, that cookie cutter stuff, to the Earth, Sun, and Rain song. You can definitely see their development as songwriters, mm-hmm. and their harmonies are more mature, and their how they're working together, and who's taking who, you know, which role in the song. I think mm-hmm. that's definitely developed there.
You know, I noticed a lot of that with Boyz II Men too when they first came out. You know, they always had great harmonies, but when they kind of got, when their popularity kind of started to go down, but they were still making records, actually, I think the quality of the harmonies actually went up.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's just a byproduct of being in the music business longer and then you learn more.
Or it's just working with the same guys.
You know.
You learn your weaknesses and strengths better.
You know, because my dad plays live music, and he was talking about that he didn't even, until he started playing with the guys that he's playing now, and my dad's in his 60s, and he's been, you know, just kind of messing around with music his whole life. He never really knew the nuances of harmonizing, as far as one person finds a key and another person has to go lower and another person has to go higher. When we always sung together, we always just kind of matched pitch because mm-hmm. it sounded cool.
Right.
But that's not really harmonizing. You know, that's just basically amplifying your own voice. And I think, you know, as they got older and more experienced, and I think they got better at that. So you could definitely see that from within the album.
Okay, and this is probably going to be the biggest surprise of the day. Which one is more deserving of being called a greatest hits album? Dan?
Color Me Bad.
Stone Cold Rhyming does not win it.
No.
Because Stone Cold Rhyming minus three songs, not so much of a greatest hit.
It's Color Me Bad.
Yeah, I agree, by the way.
Like you said, it's, you know, they took their best songs off of several different albums and a soundtrack.
Handful of soundtracks.
Yeah.
Sexual Capacity, apparently, was on, was it the Whitney Houston one or was it Striptease? I can't remember.
Striptease. It was Striptease. And was that the one
that song was hilarious.
Produced Robin Thicke, I think.
Rob Thicke at the time.
Yeah, he wasn't
he wasn't Beetlejuicing around.
And twerking on Miley Cyrus.
Yeah,
yet.
That would come later. That song was hilarious. So I'll play that right now, just so you guys can get a taste of how nonsense Color Me Bad is.
Okay. Now we can get sexual, girl, I wanna be around every day and night. Now we can get sexual, just as long as you know my sexual capacity. Now we can get sexual, I'm dying, I'm trying, I want. So,
come on, Young MC, you're not doing a lot with us right now.
No, but re-listenability.
Definitely Young MC.
Young MC.
Hands down. Why did you want to listen to it more? Or again?
I don't know if it's just partly because I am a hip-hop rap guy, and that's kind of...
You can tell it by your voice, pretty much.
Yeah.
And the way that you were rapping earlier. And your love of Twizzlers.
And my saggy pants. I don't know if it's just that I kind of lean more toward rap and hip-hop when it's presented as an option. I mean, it wasn't varied very much, but I, you know, kind of had it on when I was doing yard work, and it kind of just sounded like one big continuous song almost, but I enjoyed it. And I think that if I was, you know, in the car or, you know, taking the dogs for a walk or something like that, then it would be more enjoyable for me to experience that again. Although, you know, there were some, like I said, some tracks on the Color Me Bad one that I really, you know, did enjoy. There was more points in there where I kind of...
Sort of seemed like a chore to have to look...
Yeah, there was a couple that I kind of was wishing they would just go to the next track.
It seemed some of these songs on Color Me Bad are 4.5, 5 minutes long, and those aren't the ones that I like the most. So mm-hmm. You have to listen to a long song that's not that great, where Young MC... Even if it's a good song, he's like, I'm done in 3 minutes. You know, mm-hmm. It's just like, it was more, is consumable the right word? Mm-hmm. Like, you can take all of it in and move on to the next thing. Or you can, you know, you don't have to spend an hour listening to it because he's Stone Cold Rhyming.
And the man can truly rhyme.
Which, okay.
You were talking about more being more consumable.
Right.
I don't remember where I heard it from. It may have been like a Family Guy episode or something like that. But they were talking about the Da Vinci Code.
Okay.
One of the reasons why it's a good book is because the chapters are short, so it makes you feel really smart. Because you feel like, oh my God, I'm reading so much. And I love books like that. Like when I read books, you know, to kids and things like that, I love, you know, ones with short chapters because it kind of gives you, you know, like a feeling of accomplishment. And then, you know, you get to the end of a track and you kind of have that, you know, feeling of accomplishment. Maybe it just makes me feel smarter. I don't know what it is. But we'll give it to Young MC, so it's not a total shutout here.
But it's also, I definitely liked his album more. Liked it more. But that's not what we're doing here.
No. And that's why we always get surprised when we actually break it down.
So, Dan, who won the lesser known greatest hits album for these two?
Looks like Color Me Bad.
Whoa.
By a vote of 6-2.
The Dark Horse comes in at a photo finish.
The low seed with the upset. According to our category, it's the better of the lesser known greatest hits albums.
Great. And coming up next, we got recommendations and some plugs.
This here's a champ for all the fellas. Try to do what those ladies tell us.
So let's talk about our recommendations for, should we say lesser known greatest hits? Or do we just do greatest hits?
I did a lesser known one.
Okay.
What did you do?
I'll just tell, so what I did was the Red Hot Chili Peppers greatest hits.
Mm-hmm.
There were two. There was one called What Hits.
And I have that album.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
Not a huge fan of it.
I like their version of Love Roller Coaster. Or no, Higher Ground.
Yes. Yeah, okay, good.
Stevie Wonder song, Higher. They call it Highest Ground.
No, they call it Higher Ground. It's a, like, lyric for lyric cover.
Yeah, but I think they changed the title of it. I think to Highest Ground.
You and your superlatives today are getting out of control.
I'm pretty.
Okay,
pretty
so anyway,
sure.
So anyway, the first grade, What Hits, was covering their 1984 to 1989, and the Greatest Hits album that I'm recommending came out in 2003, and it covered pretty much everything after that. But it did have Stevie Wonder's cover of Stevie Wonder's Higher Ground on both albums. It also, so this is the reason I kind of included it in this category, is because it had two, it said previously unreleased songs, but I think that they just wrote two new songs and they just jammed it onto the Greatest Hits,
mm-hmm.
which is sort of like when you go to see a band and you're like, oh, they're going to play all my favorite songs, and they're like, we got two new tracks for
you. One off our new album.
So that's why I included it in here. There's not a doubt in my mind that you've heard of this album, and every single song on there...
You're right, it is higher ground, by the way.
There's, I think that there's probably two or three songs on this Greatest Hits that you haven't heard. Because it's like, it's got Give It Away, it's got Californication, Scar Tissue, The Other Side, By the Way, Under the Bridge, Suck My Kiss, Road Trippin', just awesome songs.
It's really,
I listened really to this album probably 100 times, mm-hmm. like, or, you know, since after I bought it. And I love it, it's great, it covers a wide variety of their albums. It's not just the hits, because they had Love Roller Coaster, you know, Can't Stop, Around the World. They decided not to put those on there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was reading about it, people were pretty upset with that. But they would have like five songs off of each album. That seems kind of unnecessary.
I like Breaking the Girl. It's a
all this stuff is great.
Wonderful song.
And I mean, like, you can see talent in their songwriting. You can sort of see they've got, you know, their punchier pop punk stuff. They've got their, like, kind of ballad stuff, they got their weird experimental stuff, they've got their fun, you know, sing-along stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Me too.
And I mean, certain of their albums I could just listen to over and over again, but I really enjoyed this Greatest Hits, and I put it on here because it's, they sort of, they put in that Fortune Faded and Save the Population, so
mm-hmm.
it's just, it sort of went off the track of a traditional Greatest Hits album, so I sort of cheated it, but we'll just ignore that.
Well, see, I didn't cheat, because I went and found one that you probably don't know exists.
Color Me Bad.
No. Have you ever heard of Young MC?
Have I?
That man.
Oh, boy.
Truly rhyme. No, I found one that was not on the cracked list.
Okay.
But one that most people probably don't know exists.
Okay.
But it is,
it does exist.
It does exist, and it's worth listening to.
It's being recommended right now.
And that is The Best of PM Dawn.
Okay, the only reason I know PM Dawn
is from when we went to trivia that
it
one
started with that, and then it was instantly referenced within a week. Is that instant? It was referenced within the week on an episode of Archer, and I would not have gotten the reference unless it were for Dan knowing who PM Dawn was at trivia. So, we didn't even win that round, by the way.
No,
I don't want to sound like sour grapes over here.
I was on fire there. Right? I got Billy Ocean and PM Dawn and SWV, Sisters with Voices.
But, okay, so why are you recommending the very greatest hits of PM Dawn?
So PM Dawn, this album came out in 2000, and PM Dawn was actually two members. It was.
It sounds like you're saying PM Dong. Is that right?
Dawn. Like the dawn of time.
Yeah, the dawn of time. TikTok, you don't stop.
Yeah, I want to sex you up. By the way, my dad says, oh, I love that song, George Michael. I said, no, Dad, that's I Want Your Sex. He was more forward about it. He said, I want your sex. You're going to give it to me.
Right.
Color Me Bad was more like, you know, I'm gonna sex you up.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Until we both wake up.
Yeah.
That's nonsense.
You're gonna get something out of this too. And George Michael's more like, I want your sex. This is all about me. He seems like a selfish lover.
This is before this is after he jumped out of Wham. So he had to be forward. He didn't have a bunch of people around.
Nope.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I'm getting ahead of myself.
So PM Dawn, they draw from five different albums. for this.
That's classic greatest hits.
For this record. The two songs that you've probably, most people have probably heard of before would be Die Without You, and that was the one that got at trivia.
Okay.
Is it my time to miss you?
You're getting a little low there. Speaking of the microphone there. That's it. Okay. I just needed the chorus.
And then Set Adrift on Memory Bliss, which is actually kind of cool because it samples the song True by Spandau Ballet.
Dan, it's not a fair recommendation when you just make stuff up.
I know this much.
Okay, I do know that.
So they sample that in Set Adrift on Memory Bliss. And Die Without You is actually one of my favorite songs of the entire 1990s. Like, if I was making, like, a best of the 1990s, I'd have, like, some Nirvana on there. I'd have Whoop, There It Is by Tag Team. I'd have, you know, something by Color Me Bad. There would be about 20 Tupac songs on there. And then there would be this PM Dawn song. Dong song. But PM Dawn is kind of a mix of, like, really good vocal harmonies and, like, kind of spoken word R&B stuff. And one of the things, they may have actually come across your news feed recently, because the two members of PM Dawn were Prince B and Doc G.
Okay.
And Prince B just passed away.
Oh, no.
On June 17th.
So we did not cause this death.
No, we did not cause this death. We're recording this on June 28th, so this is 11 days after his passing. So if you want to do a little, you know, do yourself a little tribute there, pick up the best of PM Dawn. You could probably get it pretty cheap on Amazon, probably a couple bucks. Probably be cheaper than, you know, downloaded it on iTunes or something like that. But I think that fits well into the category. I did not cheat. I could have just said, oh, I'm going to pick the, you know, the best of the Beatles or the best of Rolling Stones, 40 Licks. That's my pick for lesser known.
What about One by the Beatles, which was just their number one hits?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Because that's not greatest hits, technically.
Well, you didn't try very hard, and...
Whoa! 2003? That's going back, man.
I'm very disappointed in you. So I'm gonna go with something that actually goes with the...
Sorry, I didn't listen to a lot of underground Dawn music.
Dawn music. It kind of goes with the theme of the show here, which is greatest hits albums that most people don't even know are out there and that are able to be consumed by the public. So that's my recommendation.
All right. All right, Dan, you want to do your plugs?
Sure.
Plug one. Go.
Plug number one. Follow me on Twitter at Dan Rino, DanRyno.
Plug two. Go.
Read my stuff on InsideSTL.com and HalfGuarded.com. That's MMA stuff if you're so inclined.
Plug three.
And Punch Drunk Radio is the MMA podcast. It is on iTunes. It is on YouTube. Search my name. Search Punch Drunk. Search MMA Punch Radio Drunk.
No more plugs.
Combination
Damn.
Of that. Yeah. So if you're so inclined, or just listen to me talk crap on here with Mike.
That's not a plug. That's a self-referencing plug. Disqualified. So this has been Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
I am Dan.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening. This was episode 7 of the Comparing Apples to Oranges podcast, and I hope you liked it. Look us up on Tumblr. We are comparingapplestooranges, all one word, .tumblr.com. That's where all of the links for my co-hosts and info about upcoming and past episodes will be. Any comments or ideas for future podcasts, please send it to Twitter is at thecatopodcast, all one word. Or you can email us good ideas at catopodcasts@gmail.com. Our intro, outro, and music beds was Thumbs Up, which is a song by a great artist named Leisure B. If you liked what he was laying down and want to check out more stuff, go to humanworkshop.com. Thanks, and we'll see you next month. Bye.